Blog Talk Radio.
All cultures and ethnic groups struggle with socioeconomic issues that impact society at large. The African-American community is often especially hit hard with family, health, and educational challenges that take years to resolve. On this last Thursday of Black History Month, we'll turn to the programs and champions who are working as bridge builders to help strengthen the lives of children, families, and parents in an ever-changing world. Our community changer is longtime activist Dr. Joan Wallace Benjamin, president and CEO of the Home for Little Wanderers. She will talk to us about her work with children and families and the efforts to assist and support youth who are aging out of Massachusetts state social service system. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends and listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in to Focus on Empowerment. I hope it is warm where you are. There are so many issues going on. I wish I had 3 or 4 days where I could talk about the various issues, both domestically and internationally, that are affecting us all. We are definitely going to do a show later on in March on the uprisings that are taking place in the Middle East. We covered that subject in January. We're definitely going to come back to it. In March, we are all paying attention to what's going on now in Libya. We started off our conversation in January talking about the Ivory Coast and then Tunisia and then Egypt, and now we have to bring in Libya into the conversation along with the other countries that are pretty unsettled at this point in time. If you think you're not connected to what's going on 10, 15,000 miles away, think again when you go to the gas station and you fill up your car as our gas prices continue to rise, in part because of what's taking place in the Middle East. So we're going to talk about that in the month of March. Also, we love the response that we're getting to Connections Magazine, our multicultural magazine that will debut in the spring. I'm excited about our advertisers, the articles that we're having covered, all dealing with multicultural issues, and again, we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. But we want to turn our attention now to a very important subject that just, oh my goodness, the services, the resources just never can be enough because there are so many things that are needed, and it's a very complex issue that really touches us all, dealing with family issues, dealing with children in particular. I'm really honored to have on this show Dr. Joan Wallace Benjamin, who is a longtime friend and colleague, longtime community activist, and now longtime leader of the Home for Little Wanderers in the greater Boston area. Hello, Joan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good afternoon, Carol. Thank you very much for having me.
What pretty much keeps you up at night with your job that you have? I mean, you have a $42 million organization covering pieces and places all over the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and beyond, many, many families whose lives are being touched by your organization. What keeps you up at night?
Well, you know, we are, in fact, serving the Commonwealth's most vulnerable in children and families. And so what keeps me up is whether or not we're doing the kind of job that we're committed to doing, whether we have the resources to continue doing it. You know, in the times we're in today with the economy and the state budget, we have increasing numbers of people who need assistance and decreasing resources with which to serve them. So, you know, when that's the circumstance, you just wonder from day to day, will you be able to meet the mandate and the mission of the organization?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure that what I'm now finding out is we had this big drop in the economy in 2007 and 2008, And I would say, I'd like for you to respond to this, but I would say that many social service agencies like yours weren't immediately affected, like corporations and small businesses and others. But I would imagine now, since the duration is continuing, that you're probably feeling the pinch right now. Is that not true, Joe?
Well, you know, just in a very, in a kind of a simple way, an easy way to understand, we have seen a change, for example, in just the people who 2 years ago were our donors are now recipients of the services. And so we have we run a toy drive during the month of December where we distribute over 15,000 gifts and toys. Well, we had kind of on the receiving line this year people who in the past had actually dropped gifts and toys off as donors to the effort. So I think the economy has trickled down across the community. It has not hit just the poorest of the poor, who always seem to kind of bear the biggest brunt, but has also seeped, as we know, into the middle class and into families who were the working poor.
So what I'm hearing is that your responsibilities and demands have expanded, and I guess you're trying to make sure that the revenue stream keeps up with the demand, particularly with people who have been donors in the past and now, unfortunately, are recipients.
Right. And, you know, we are a large portion of the $42 million that you mentioned comes through contracted relationships with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And so whenever the state budget is tight, as we know it is, the Commonwealth cannot engage in the business with its contractors as it has in the past. And then we also provide a lot of clinical services to kids and families that are reimbursed through third-party billing, Medicaid, MassHealth, and other insurances. And those environments are tight as well. So what we are able to get reimbursed for, there are fewer things that we can get reimbursed for than perhaps in the past.
And fortunately, we are not Wisconsin. We're all looking at Wisconsin, what's going on there with the massive cuts that they're dealing with and all the protesters, the governor now. So fortunately, we're in pretty, I guess, decent shape with our governor and the budget situation the way it is now. So that's I can only imagine what social services they're having to cut and face in Wisconsin and other states that are had real issues.
You know, we have our challenges, but we do have a state administration, a governor, and his senior people that are committed to doing whatever they can for human services. And at the very least, they listen. They want to hear what we have to say. They want to understand what the challenges are out on the ground. And so lines of communication have been open. Now, do you always agree? Will it always go the way service providers and advocates want it to go? Maybe not, but at least there is an environment here where communication is open and transparent.
Right. I want to talk to you about a number of your programs, but most specifically at first, I want to talk about mental health and the kind of mental health programs and services that the Home for Little Wanderers offers, and for two reasons. Number one, one of my listeners emailed me before the show. Mm-hmm. She's going to be downloading the show and archiving it and listening to it because she's concerned about mental health services in Massachusetts. And then secondly, my daughter is a clinical coordinator for a facility in Connecticut and just shy of being called a clinical psychologist because she's got to take her exam, but I mean, she deals with these issues every day with young girls and the facility that she manages and works with. What is it like? What are some of the constraints or the opportunities from your point of view as a leader of a major agency in dealing with mental health issues with, let's say, the communities of color, particularly the African-American community?
Right. Well, traditionally, here in Massachusetts, and I think probably around the country, mental health services and the field of mental health has never been funded and compensated adequately. Now, you know, we could talk about what we think some of the historical reasons for that are, but the fact of the matter is that the payment for those services, the availability of those services, have not been available in the same measure as for other kinds of health-related issues. You know, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has the Rosie D. v. Romney case, which actually the plaintiffs of that case were families of children who were severely emotionally disturbed, who were not being served in the Commonwealth adequately, and the plaintiffs did, in fact, win the case. And so Massachusetts right now is kind of operationalizing and executing the Rosie D mandates, which say that kids who are seriously emotionally disturbed are entitled to services. Those services should be paid for. So, you know, unfortunately, here in the Commonwealth, and this precedes the current administration, certainly, in the Commonwealth, have had to go the court route just to ensure that kids who are confronted and families confronted with mental illness have adequate coverage.
And to me, I think that is almost unleashing Pandora's box. There are so many reasons to expand on mental health issues, not just from a children's perspective, but certainly from an adult's perspective, as people
Absolutely.
Deal with pressure, as they try to stumble through their day, not just here in Massachusetts, but certainly around the country and elsewhere, because I have listeners in other countries who listen as well. So just the stress of modern-day life can wreak havoc on families. And
oh, absolutely. And then you add poverty to that, and you add lack of educational attainment on behalf of some of the adults, and the stressors become really huge. I mean, many of the kids and families that we work with have experienced the trauma of abuse and neglect. And, you know, we say here at the home, and people believe, you know, no family or parent wakes up one morning and says, you know, I just think I'll do a bad job at this, or I just think I'll abuse my child. That's not how it happens. It's a confluence of circumstances. It's poverty. It's not having enough to eat. It's being unemployed. It's all of the stressors that all of us know, particularly those of us that are parenting, that just are heaped upon you. And at some point, for people who are less resourced, it just becomes overwhelming, and they're not able to manage it. And unfortunately, fortunately for the kids and their families, they get the help. But unfortunately, trauma has come into the family environment, and therefore organizations like the home and other child welfare agencies get involved, and the Commonwealth is involved in the care of these vulnerable citizens. So, you know, it's something in some ways that ought to be looked at, you know, rather charitably, because the people want to do a good job with their kids. People want to be loving, the majority. Now, you know, you certainly have some outliers. So the home's in place to help families that want to do the right thing, and we're trying to clear away some of the barriers that prevent them from, experiencing a healthy developmental experience with their child.
One of the other programs that you're involved in, and this is something that I had to think about when I was booking you for the show, are the young people who are, for whatever reason, in the care of social services with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We call it DSS or DCF. DCF, Department of Children and Family Services, and they hit 18 years old. What happens to them at that point? And tell us about the Aging Out program that you have been instrumental in helping these young people make this transition.
Sure. Well, you know, just so this is really an example of an area of public policy that is changing and has changed pretty significantly over the last several years. You're right. In fact, states like Massachusetts, and Massachusetts is not alone, had kids leave the child welfare system, leave the care of a foster parent or the care of an organizational program like ours at the age of 18. And I think everyone is realizing that that's an anachronism. I mean, that's from a day when you could be 18, have a high school diploma, you know, you married your high school sweetheart, you bought your first entry-level home, you worked for a company 30 years and collected a gold watch and made a good middle-class life. That doesn't exist today. 18 is way too young for kids to be independent and on their own. Even developmentally, the brain and good decision-making is not fully in place in the brain until the age of 23. And so we wonder, you know, why do teenagers and young adults do silly things? Well, because developmentally, they're not ready to make the kinds of decisions that we would ask them to make at 18. So I think the Commonwealth and other states have a realization about this now. They know that 18 is not really, not every child, but the majority of young people. I'm the mother of a 27 and 22-year-old, and I know that at 18, there was no way in the world they could have been completely on their own. It just the metrics of success are not there. So we, the Home for Little Wanderers, has taken on a particular interest in this population. And it's interesting because as we talk about them, the average citizen in Massachusetts doesn't realize that there are kids out there at 18 and 19 years old that are really sort of left to their own devices, that often end up homeless, that are prematurely parenting, that are at risk of the criminal justice system. I mean, they are a very, very high-risk population. And we realize we could avoid them. We could keep them from being high-risk if we could hold on to them a little longer, let them get a little older and more mature, and surround them with the kind of supports that we know that they will need when they are really old enough to take care of themselves. So the Commonwealth allows kids to remain involved with the child welfare system here until the age of 21. We allow for health care now. That's a new piece of legislation that was passed to allow kids up through the age of 21 to even receive health care. They weren't eligible for health care. So there's been a lot of work done. The home's been instrumental in that work here in the Commonwealth. And I think across the nation we're going to see changing tides around this, realizing that we have a model of service that's just outdated given what the nation is all about today.
So is there an actual program that you are implementing or a part of? I know that in 2008 there was the task force that looked at this issue.
Right.
Is there actually is there a program in place that's implemented, or you're just aware that these
we've actually Right. We actually have a couple of programmatic responses to this issue. One is the Academic Support for College and Life program. It's a program that's based out at Bridgewater State University. Dana Molaferia, the president of the university, and I have been very good colleagues and friends, and we approached him and the university about basing a program for kids who have aged out of the system on his campus. And so we have kids aging out who are attending Bridgewater State University with the support of case managers and some staff people that we have to support them there. We were very successful through the task force in getting the governor to not only approve, which had been in the past, free tuition, state tuition for kids who have aged out, but also for those of us that have ever paid college tuition know that fees are as much as the tuition. So the governor, Patrick, did sign into legislation tuition and fee waivers for kids who have been in the foster care system and have aged out. And so now our kids are able to enter state colleges and universities across the Commonwealth and have financial support for doing that. So this program out at Bridgewater, we've been running for the last 2 years. It's very, very successful. We have kids who are both getting the support that they need from the home, but also are just a part of the community at Bridgewater University. We picked a residential university because one of the biggest challenges for this population when they age out is housing. Many of them are homeless. We have several thousand homeless high school kids in the Commonwealth, kids who are also considered disconnected young people. But so we have a group of kids who are at risk of homelessness if they don't have a place to live. So a residential campus is an excellent location. It provides housing. It provides room and board, food, and a place for kids to be while they're being educated. And so we feel like a program like this is a great combination. It's solving a lot of problems in using one kind of intervention. And we also know we're now building, hopefully, college graduates. All of the data knows that the earning power and earning potential for people who have a college degree is much higher. And so here are kids who the Commonwealth tax dollars have really been paying to support, who we are hoping to put on their feet, and they become taxpayers and are contributing to the economy of the Commonwealth.
Are you actually, I know you're probably doing this internally, but I mean, this could be a wonderful success story that needs to be shared with not just us here in Massachusetts, but certainly around the country. Are you tracking the numbers of these students so that you can show testimonials or talk about testimonials in the coming years, so that people will see, this is where my tax dollars are going?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, this is really a program that could be replicated almost anywhere, because there are many, many other state colleges and universities in Massachusetts, and as we know, there's a state college system across the nation. So, in fact, states could provide this kind of opportunity. We have a sort of a model for how it works. We're happy to share the model. The program's in early days yet, so we're still studying it and trying to figure out, what are the interventions that are going to make it most successful. But it is something that, that states could take on. Here in Massachusetts, we have between 600 and 700 kids who age out on an annual basis. That's not an insurmountable number of young people to do something for. So if every state college or university in the area took 20 kids, you could put an unbelievable dent in providing lifelong earning and career potential for kids who have aged out of the foster care system.
Well, what you're doing, what you're saying is that the tax dollars are actually becoming investment dollars. You're investing
these
young people
in
a way where they're going to their earned income in the coming years will pay back whatever money was paid out for them.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely.
They're contributing to our society and helping the economic development piece. I'm definitely going to have you back on once you get those numbers.
Okay, absolutely.
And but tell me about another program that you're running. You know, originally this home goes back to 1799, I believe, or
1799.
You're over 200 years old.
Yep, yep.
And started off really dealing with orphans. Are you still dealing with orphans to a significant degree?
No, we really are not. I mean, most of the kids, even the kids in particular, that do live with us. So the home has maintained over the many, many years a residential component to the work that we do, where kids for some period of time, because home is not safe, do come and live in a residential environment with us. However, most of those young people do have parents. So they're not orphans in the sense that their parents are deceased. There are some questions for some of them about whether they will return to their home of origin or return to their biological parents, just because there are so many things going on there that we're not sure that safety can be maintained. I mean, you know, the reality is kids are really resilient, and you can work with them, and they can get back on their feet, and they can get better. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, adults move a little bit more slowly. So we often have kids ready to move on, that we've dealt with their trauma, we've made them stronger and more secure, and they're ready to go, but they may not have an environment of adults ready to receive them. So for that reason, the home runs an intensive foster care program, so some of those kids sometimes do go into foster care. We run an adoption program for older waiting children, children who have been in the child welfare system, who are not infants, but you know, the ripe old age, 7, 8, 9 years old. And so our goal is to find a family alternative, either with kin or with other family or with your biological family at some point in time. That's the hope.
How did you get involved? You have a doctorate from Brandeis. You have a stellar record here in Massachusetts. How did you get involved in this kind of work?
Well, you know, I've always worked in organizations, Boston's Head Start program, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston, the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts have always been organizations that serve children and families. So that's kind of been my thing. and so when the home called and said, you know, would I think about coming here, and I read about it and understood the significant work they do for kids and families. You know, I just saw the move here as an extension of the years and years of work I have been doing.
Mm-hmm. And what's on the horizon for you going forward?
Well, for me, I'm, you know, the Home for Little Wanderers is in the quiet phase of a capital campaign, and we are trying to build an So I can give my commercial now, right?
We're going to
build a new facility out in Walpole where we will relocate some of our kids that are being served here in Boston. It's 160 beautiful acres. So what's ahead of me is to get this capital campaign finished. I need $18 million. I'm almost halfway there. And so we'll see how long it takes before we're able to move the kids into new and much more dignified a much more dignified environment. But so I really don't have a big game plan for the future. I'm happy here at the home. We've got lots of work to do. We've got some wonderful program initiatives in the queue and actually happening right now. So I'm just here trying to make it happen.
And for those who are listening, I have several people in the chat room who are listening to you and those who are going to download the show afterward as well. For those who are interested, you can go to thehome.org. That's thehome.org and learn more about the Home for Little Wanderers and certainly learn more about Dr. Joan Wallace Benjamin. It is Black History Month, and in closing, can you share with us some words of wisdom for, let's say, a young person who's looking up to you and maybe they're saying, I don't know how in the world I'm going to get through high school, let alone college, but then I see this very promising and achievement-oriented and successful Black woman who has made it in the system, dedicating her life to families and children. What would you tell that kind of young person who needs a word of encouragement from someone like you, Joan Wallace Benjamin?
Well, I think, you know, none of us does this alone, okay? And so for some of us, our parents have been a driving force, other family members, a teacher, a minister, a neighbor. I would say to a young person, find somebody that thinks you are really terrific and see if they would be able to help you achieve your goals. And so if there's a teacher at a school that you like and that you respect and care about, see if they would be willing to play some role in helping you get to where you're trying to be. The other thing I'd say is, you know, be persevere, be dedicated, be focused. Don't take no for an answer. Put one foot in front of the other and work as hard as you can. And, you know, the combination of all of that and the caring adult is a really, really important part of it. Not that kids can't do it on their own, but it is so much easier and reaps so much more success if you have a caring adult in your life. So that would be some advice.
Great. And then one more piece of advice I'd like for you to share before we let you go. Let's say you're listening and you're talking to someone who is a little stuck. They're maybe in middle management. Maybe they've had some successes on the job. Maybe they're in their late 30s or early 40s, and they're looking for something else to fulfill them in their life. What advice would you give to them?
Well, I think there are organizations all over the Commonwealth that that are doing charitable good works that need board members, that need volunteers. I mean, the Home for Little Wanderers runs a very large and significant volunteer program. We have a full-time volunteer coordinator here. So I think if you want to get involved and you want to even just test the waters about whether or not a certain kind of work is what you'd like to do or a certain experience you'd like to have, you know, call one of the community organizations in your community and ask, is there a way that you can be involved? I think you'll reap lots of great experience for it. It can go on a resume. It's not the kind of work that has to stay invisible. And it gives you a real perspective of what's going on actually in the community at the community-based level.
I've really enjoyed having you on the show today.
Well, thank you.
I know you have an incredibly busy schedule. We've been talking to Dr. Joan Wallace Benjamin, who is the president and CEO of the Home for Little Wanderers. I say much success to you.
Well,
please come
you,
back when you get those numbers in place with the students who have aged out and they are making successful transitions in, on college campuses like Bridgewater State. And we just would love to have you back on at another time. But thank you so much.
I would be happy to come anytime. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. All the best to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye. We've been talking to Dr. Joan Wallace Benjamin, and she is the head of a large organization, $42 million organization with thousands of young people that she's been responsible for directly and indirectly through the various programs that they run. And she's already said that you can volunteer. There are volunteer opportunities, not just at her home, but certainly if you live in other states or elsewhere outside of the United States, that's something to really consider. But she certainly is a role model and one to admire because of the work that she's done. The website, again, is www.thehome.org. And I would encourage you to go there and look at their historical timeline. You're not going to find many organizations like theirs with the age that they have. They're over 200 years old, starting off back in 1799 as the Boston Female Asylum, which was established as an orphanage. Actually, our president, our second president, John Adams' wife, Abigail Adams, was a founding contributor. I have a lot of respect for her for many reasons. And then later it became the Boston Society for the Care of Girls. And finally, the Home for Little Wanderers that we know of, with many other name changes in between. But Joan Wallace Benjamin has been on the forefront of social action and working with families and children for many years. She is a great guest to close out our series on Black History this month. I would encourage you, if you're listening live, thank you so much for those in the chat room. Share this show with others. Because it just doesn't speak to Massachusetts. It probably speaks to the nation. It speaks to the world in terms of social services and families and how they have to be supported and nurtured and encouraged in good times and in bad. We hope that you will continue having a great weekend. Have a wonderful week coming up. I've got an exciting list of guests that are lined up for Women's History Month, which follows Black History Month. We want you to pay attention to what's going on with the news. I would encourage you to go to news sources like EnglishAlJazeera.net and find out live what's taking place over in the Middle East, because we're going to talk about that in the coming weeks. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Have a great week or weekend, and we will see you next week.